Welcome back, Stu. I want to thank you so kindly for taking me to one of your greasy spoons for lunch yesterday. It really completed my week. Oh, and the week isn't even over, of course.
I think you're being harsh calling it a greasy spoon, but it's a lovely little spot. And those who like old-time places may even know about it if you're a New York City resident. But it's the B&H Dairy on 2nd Avenue between 7th and 8th. It's a wonderful place. You feel like you're at home, and they're chummy, and it's comfortable.
Well, I didn't really feel at home. My mother had modern Danish furniture in the little bedroom. But that said, I will say it was enjoyable, although I find it so disagreeable how you talk to people other than who you're with and try to be friendly. What's the point? This is New York.
It leads to interesting experiences. It really does.
Yeah, like a rusty scissor in your back. I'm psycho pal.
Oh, I do at the end want to say something about the upcoming show, just at the end.
Why don't we say it now? Why don't we talk about it?
Well, folks, look, I've been doing a solo show prompted by my background in Vietnam, stage play, one man. I've been doing it now going into its 11th year, and I've got a gig coming up at a wonderful little theater in Westchester in a little town called Croton Falls, not to be confused with Croton Harmon, Croton Falls, easy to get to on the Metro North. I think it's the Harlem line, but it's a wonderful piece and there'll be a nice audience there. And it's a nice theater, got a nice little restaurant in town if you're interested. And that's at 7 p.m. 29th.
29th.
Vietnam War Veterans Day. And David's going to be coming up.
I am. It's the Schoolhouse Theater.
Oh, thank
you. Make sure you mention that. I will tell you this. I will not be on a train. As far as the restaurant's concerned, you do have to give me the name. And I'm coming with a few other people as well.
You told me.
To show some support. Yes. Someone who actually served in the military, unlike our current flat-footed president and his autistic butt buddy.
Well, that's about that.
All right. Well, I think Stu wanted to start on a positive note. How cliche, right? I will permit it. I will humor him, but I plan to rain all over this parade.
Well, look, with all the agonies of today's politics and certainly the confused economic circumstances, I thought maybe a couple of wow moments to boost the spirits. And I'm starting with the date, July 20, 1969. Do any of you remember where you were on that day? Probably not. I do. I remember staring up at the moon, listening to a radio report as Neil Armstrong left the lunar landing module and walked on the moon. And as he said, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. I'm sure every American that day, most every American, was proud as hell, because in those days, those things weren't happening. It was a first of a kind, and it was so extraordinary to think about things whizzing through the air and safely landing somewhere else and then coming home. Today, though, I think special astronautical moments have become mundane. People don't find them worthy of attention, not essential. So many more supposedly important things are folks find to follow on social media. See you at the pop-up event for, as an example, something or other. Another, I'm bored. What can we do over Memorial Day weekend? And then there's the, did you see what Kim Kardashian wore last night? Oh, that's so important.
It most certainly is. I must disagree with you on that little facetious remark that you made.
And then, you know, for those who have Taylor Swift in their sights all the time, someone might say, geez, I got to stand within 50 feet of Taylor Swift as she left the concert. Well, my God. So that's one wonderful moment. Now, David can control himself for a moment or just go as he and let me go through another one.
I'll be quiet, but I will say, I don't think you should be picking on poor Taylor Swift, Stuart. She's had a very, very accomplished career.
I'm not picking on her particularly, but I don't put her in the same context.
You mean they're not going to come with me to the next concert?
Oh, God, no.
I could picture you in a rhinestone.
Oh, don't think so. And now, moving fast forward, right along to magic moment number two. Two astronauts, Sonny Williams and Butch Wilmore, had been left at the International Space Station for 9 months. This was last year. Why? Because there was concern about the safety of the vehicle that was to take them home from the station. And so the International Space Station. And so they didn't leave. And there was some question as to when they'd come back, which introduced all sorts of, geez, I wonder what'll happen. Is everything going to be okay? Most people would have some, you know, concern about such a thing. What, you know, when things go wrong, will more go wrong and all that? But yesterday, those two folks and two other astronauts, one a Russian, left the station at 1:05 a.m. and splashed down on schedule, repeat, on schedule at 5:57 p.m. yesterday, same day. Imagine that, the problems we have with transportation, timeliness, and they're coming all this way. They had been circling the Earth at 17,000 miles an hour and continued that for some period on the way down until they started to deploy other things. And the temperature on their capsule on the way down, when they started hitting the Earth's atmosphere, get this, 3,500 degrees Fahrenheit. 3,500, that's right outside them. And imagine how they were safely kept safe inside. You can't afford any mistakes on that one. And I watched the final 2 hours of the flight on a website called NASA Plus. There used to be some TV stations doing it, but that some of that probably is cut now, but called NASA Plus. And I found it absolutely inspirational. And I got goosebumps as I heard cheers from the technical folks on the ground who happened to be in California, but cheers from them when the capsule landed in the water just off the west coast of Florida. I was alone, but I was cheering in my apartment. I think it was just a marvelous moment. And then it was kind of a nice little thing from an animal perspective. A pod of dolphins greeted the capsule as it bobbed in the water. That was kind of a cute thing. And the announcer for SpaceX said, well, they were now an unofficial part of the rescue party. And as the foursome exited the capsule, which was on a ship now, they didn't take them out while it's bobbing in the water. They now have a special ship. As they exited the capsule, there were cheers from the crew on board the rescue ship. And it's just very touching when you see this. And the four of them were all smiles and thumbs up as they were helped off. And help was certainly needed for the two of them, Sonny Williams and Butch Wilmore, because they had been without gravity now for 9 months. And after a period of time, you start losing, I don't want to say muscle mass, I'm not sure I'm right, but they get reduced in size and effectiveness because they're not getting used, your muscles. So it takes them months, maybe many months in this case, to get back muscle strength. But that's just one of the details they deal with without question and disturbance. And then finally, I'll just ask, on the other side of things, where is that excitement that used to accompany achievements in space? I have a feeling that everything, after some experience, you start to, it's just not as spectacular as before. I suppose there's some of that natural thing. And then I think there's another factor that gets into it. People these days, I think, young mostly, but old as well, they get lost in video games, selfies, Instagram, Facebook, and whatever else there is out there. And I think that's all about self and not others, not about some broader picture of things. I think it's self-absorption. And now I turn it over to David to, you know, do whatever it'd like to what I just did.
I'm going to try. Not to criticize your stupid.
But do what you got to. But what you got to.
Selfishness. What did Ayn Rand, who said wrote an essay or a book called The Virtues of Selfishness? And I kind of agree with her. It's all about me, Stu. I will say I want to agree with you that it is nice that those astronauts did get to go home.
Sure.
After, you know, that demented Irish piece of garbage Joe Biden left them out there without a definitive end. And so we could call...
There was some scheduling. It gets disregarded these days.
May I tell you this, Stu? If those two were angry black lesbians who criticized America and called it inherently racist, Biden would have got them back, just as he did that Strega, Brittany Griner, who was got out of
running. No excuse there. No excuse.
But on another note, I guess we could be proud of America that we were able to do this, but who funds SpaceX and who helps finance it? I'll tell you who, Stu.
Who?
The Chinese. It has substantial investors are Chinese, the Chinese interests. So for all our railing about China by the orange buffoon, this is who did it. And it also brings to mind, once again, serious problems and what a national security risk it is that we are allowing an autistic baby daddy with 14 children and substantial investments from China in his companies besides Tesla. This is concerning to me, and once again, further emphasizes to me how he should have no credit for this whatsoever. I do credit the Chinese government for it and their smart investment in the engineers at that company. But as far as our Kedmore...
Well, there are a lot of American engineers that were involved, and I got to give credit to that technical crew.
Absolutely. I was going to say that, Stu. I was going to say that. And the money that the Chinese are using to pay their salaries. Because, now, I realized, I may sound like a little bit of an ingrate, but I will say, of all the things that have happened in the last 2 months, this was probably one of the few substantive accomplishments of the Trump era. Other than that, we've had a bunch of executive orders that could be easily reversed. Many courts are already overturning them, including the dismantling of USAID, which was declared unconstitutional by a court, and how our little friend Elon...
Who knows what these pauses, though, do to the programs underway and the testing, the medical testing. A lot of that's going on overseas.
Well, apparently they're also planning to cut testing and prevention of HIV substantially, not just in Africa, but here too, to save money. You know, I think if we're going to save money, we should do it smartly. We shouldn't do it in this kind of draconian, crazy way. But on that note, I will say I'm glad those people are home with their families.
Sure.
I'm sorry Joe Biden left them up there to rot. And I'm thankful for the Chinese government for funding this endeavor. I'm certainly not thankful to the autistic baby daddy who, may I add, has become even more unhinged. But we'll get to that in a bit. But let's pivot to my world. I know I've kind of already gone off a little, but one of the things when I think of Trump is a quote from Macbeth, which is a very fitting quote. And it kind of reminds me of that 100-minute bullshit speech he gave a few weeks ago. It's a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. This is what I've always viewed Trump as, kind of a buffoonish big mouth who's all talk, very little action. And I mean, he's taken a lot of actions, nothing that has been beneficial, may I add. And the liberals, I've never suffered from derangement syndrome like they have. And, you know, liberals use the term fascist and Hitler for Republicans. They've been using it for generations, right? They even referred to Mitt Romney as Hitler. Now, can you imagine Mr. Rogers of the Mormon, who looks like reminds me of Mr. Rogers, except he's taller? Does he strike you as a Hitler-esque figure?
No, but I mean, he's been a wonderful legislator who didn't have the charisma to go further in the presidential debates and election process.
You flatter him, but
I do.
I think he's okay. I don't really dislike him, but he's certainly not Hitler. But they've also referred to Trump as Hitler-esque and fascist and autocratic and authoritative. And I didn't take it all that seriously. But let's go back. What was one of the things when Hitler came to power that he did? He started annexing territories, starting off with Austria, as you may recall.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, and several that just went, it was almost like dominoes.
They fell like dominoes. In addition, with the help of Joseph Goebbels, his propagandist, he seized control of the radio, literature. There were book burnings, silencing opposition media. They were shut down.
Boy.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of scary, dangerous things. Well,
right now.
I don't know what the truth is, But I want to draw some analogies here. What has Trump been talking about? Annexing Canada and Greenland and re-seizing the Panama Canal. Now, I don't know if he'll ever succeed in any of this. He's not really all that successful in a lot of things, except his self-promotion, speaking of self-indulgent. But it is rather disturbing that we are seeing these inclinations. In addition to that, at the moment, we discussed last week the DEI and how it's used as a cudgel to silence people. There's been other actions that I find strange. First of all, why is President Trump seizing control of the Kennedy Center, firing the entire board and the CEO, who was his friend, right, and deciding to take it over because, quote unquote, it was too wokey? Truth be known is, I don't think the Kennedy Center was what we would call avant-garde theater. It had the National Symphony Orchestra. It had performances of Broadway shows and the like. For example, one of which was Hamilton. Now, Hamilton has now canceled its performance in reaction. And who has Trump placed on the board? I'll give you a few of the more egregious examples.
Apart from him at the head.
Yes. Like, what does he know about culture? I mean, seriously, this is a guy who hangs out with Kid Rock, other assorted B-grade celebrities. Not even a Kardashian, may I add. First of all, he'll put Kanye. He's an anti-Semite, so them I'd fit in with the whole Nazi thing that I'm drawing here. But Lee Greenwood, who 30 years ago had that song, I'm Proud to Be an American, and I don't really know if I could view someone like him as a cultural arbiter, not to be a snob, but what other songs has he done? Who is he? This is not anyone's of any note.
Wait a minute. I don't care what else he has done or not done. That song captured America's heart and still does periodically.
30 years ago.
But right now it still works.
It doesn't work for me, frankly, because
But that's just one man, one song.
My point is, I don't view this guy as somebody who should be on the board. Nor, even worse, do I think Laura Ingraham, who was a Fox News commentator, well-educated, smart woman, but clearly she's jumped the shark, as they would say, many years ago, as to a shrill and culture-like existence, except she's nowhere near as funny. And, you know, what does she know about it? She's a Fox News talking head, right? And then, of course, our lovely vice president and his wife, who I really think seems to be a lovely person, was on the board. But once again, if she wasn't J.D. Piglet Vance's wife, she would never be in the board. And I think the guy who they put in charge of the whole center is Rick Grinnell, who was another Trump lackey.
It's going to be the Grand Ole Opry. But boy, that's where
it's... I don't think it's going to be that good, Stu.
Well, I don't mean... You know what I mean. Country and Western.
Let it be country and Western, but what does Trump have to do with country and Western? He's from New York. He speaks like he's from Queens. He is from Queens. I mean, he should have some rap, you know, some street cred.
Oh, God, don't even whisper it.
Well, what's even funnier about it, Stu, is when J.D. Piglet Vance and his wife were there last week for a performance of the National Sympathy, the audience turned around and he received sustained booing for 30 seconds. It was embarrassing and disgraceful. Now, normally, I think that's kind of mean-spirited, but that little piglet with his eyeliner and all the rest of it, he deserves it. He really does. And this is disturbing for what it symbolizes, in my opinion. Now, in addition to the assault on the Kennedy Center, they've also been withholding money from colleges and universities.
Oh, yes.
And two notable examples being Columbia and Johns Hopkins.
$800 million at Hopkins.
Right. And they're doing it under the pretext that they're not protecting Jewish students. Now, I agree. I don't think Johns Hopkins has really been at the hotbed of these anti-Semitic protests, but Columbia certainly has and didn't handle it well.
I don't think the $800 million was taken away because of anti-Jewish stuff. That is yet to be determined with respect to Hopkins.
It was because of the cutbacks and funding.
Aid.
For some.
USAID.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Because they're all over the world and they're doing wonderful stuff. But the other hammer, you know, so to speak, may fall because I think they're on a list with 8 or 10 other schools
All the schools who have had cutbacks. Now they've announced $175 million for Penn. These institutions are viewed as enemies by these crackpots, and they want to silence them and stifle academic freedom. So they're withholding these funds, whether that's legal or not is another question, since legality seems to have gone out the closet. And they're using it to get them to stifle them. Disturbing, similar to what the Nazis did. Now, let's talk about the media. And one of the more, we've had a number of examples of how media has been cowered by Trump.
Oh, yeah.
Really has been his lackey as well. The most notable is that disgusting, balding, weasel piece of garbage, Jeff Bezos, okay? We saw him at the inauguration on his knees performing fellatio entre. And we also saw before the election, the Washington Post, for the first time in history, never endorsed a presidential candidate, which is disgraceful that you would like take an august newspaper with people like Bob Woodward, who exposed Watergate, on your staff, led by Katherine Graham, who is a legendary figure in journalism. Now it's being run by this guy with some woman with big boobs that she had put in by a
plastic. Let's not denigrate big boobs, though, please.
They weren't real, Stu. I think that the fact that this disgusting weasel of a man has also neutered the editorial page. And
an editor left the other day, didn't she?
A number of editors. It's been huge turnover. He's turned that newspaper into a disaster. Poor Katherine Graham and that family is turning over in their graves as to what he has been doing. Now, what beyond these events, stifling newspapers, taking over art institutions, threatening people to silence them? Now we have on March 14th, this is unbelievable, frankly, the autistic baby daddy, who's become more and more manic as time has gone down, he retweeted a tweet that claimed that Stalin, Hitler, and Mao didn't cause the death of millions. It was the people that were under their watch. AKA, he is basically making excuses for genocidal maniacs. Now, And part of it is his frustration that his effort to peer down the federal government has resulted in a huge backlash against him. He had a huge backlash from this and, of course, undid the retweets or whatever you do. I don't even know. But the fact that his instinct is to press that button would tell you where his mind is. It's not just right wing. It is supporters. He's a supporter of genocide. And this isn't the first time he did it. In 2023, he also, I think...
Well, he's certainly a supporter of despots. I know that at the top.
Clearly.
And he feels more comfortable with them intellectually.
He wants to be one. He also, as I said, in 2023, I think liked another or retweeted another anti-Semitic post that was called The Actual Truth, What Jewish People Were Doing, which was a kind of sinister implication. So this is just, when he also went on to say that he found it hard to believe that no one tried to assassinate Biden, yet Trump had two assassination attempts, so that's all. And then, of course, when he did the Nazi salute, a while ago. Remember he did that?
No, you told me, but I don't...
I don't know if it was at the inauguration. He gave a Nazi salute. The image has been plastered all over the place. When he did it, all his apologists, the Fox News people, for example, leave him alone. He's autistic. He flails around. He does hand motions. But if you really look at that tape, it looks like a really authentic Heil Hitler.
Not being done as a joke, maybe a tasteless joke, but not being done as a joke, something...
It looks pretty disturbing to me. And then not only that, what's ironic about it, if poor Elon was in Nazi Germany with his disabilities as an autistic, he would end up in Mengele's lab, experimented with, or he would have just been sent to the gas chamber. So while he admires these despots and dictators, I find it rather interesting that Trump would affiliate himself with someone of such bizarre viewpoints. Now, as an aside, there was a very interesting article called Fear and Loathing in the West Wing by Tara Palmieri. Now, when I first read it, I thought, this is BS, this is just gossip, blah, blah, blah. But apparently she's a legitimate journalist. Inside the White House, the staff, they hate this guy. They think he's creepy. They think it's weird that he's sleeping in the Eisenhower office buildings on a cot. They were furious when he went on Kudlow and made a complete buffoon out of himself and completely undermined their mission by saying Social Security wants to be eliminated. Even Kudlow was even acting like he was like put off by the bizarre performance. And once again, Musk was claiming that the entitlements like Social Security are being used to pay to illegal immigrants, when in all truth, the statistics show otherwise. A lot of illegal immigrants do pay into Social Security because they're here and they're on payrolls, but they don't collect because they're afraid to. So he also treats the staff in the White House, including Susie Wiles, like garbage and dismissive, even though he doesn't know anything about the government. So this is a very strange man. It's a very dangerous man. And to add a little light note to this, Stu, during the Lawrence Kudlow interview, he was asked about what's happening to his business interests, and he started to become tearful. He was crying. And apparently in private, in front of Trump, he had a crying outburst because of what has happened to Tesla. And that's like his baby, which is what propelled Trump to do that used car salesman thing in front of the White House. But for all of us who are...
I think a painting of that would be really priceless.
I don't even... It's certainly...
A painting of that with maybe Trump with an auctioneer's gavel or something.
It wouldn't be Washington crossing the Delaware. I could... But on a positive note, Stu, I'm going to end on a positive note. Tesla's stock since December is down close to 50%. And Elon Musk's net asset value, which is very much tied up in Tesla, is down by $140 billion.
Leaving him
still with too much money than he deserves. Yeah. But this is it's half of his net worth.
Well, that stuff going on that I just saw about fires, people torching Teslas. I think it was in Canada. So I said,
it wasn't just Canada. It's been all the
going on. That's a dangerous thing, but it's certainly not a good thing for his company, but it's dangerous for other reasons.
Well, the car sales are substantially down. In Europe, most people are refusing to buy the car. The Tesla was not allowed to be displayed.
Well, they're afraid up in Canada at some car show or something. They don't want them up there because they legitimately have. I mean, they may have several reasons, but legitimate fear over what it could provoke within a building.
Well, it's kind of ironic that Trump and Musk, who seem to emulate the Nazi tactics, in Musk's case, actually gives the Nazi salute, they're having their own little Kristallnacht with Tesla.
Oh, boy.
And frankly, I normally don't condone this kind of behavior, but I do condone, don't buy that shitty car, and let's put this guy out of business and deport him back where he belongs so he could actually serve in the military. And then he'll have at least some credibility to call one of our great U.S. senators a traitor.
This just triggered an idea that we haven't spoken of yet, and if we don't have time now, that's okay. But it reminded me of an incident in California involving the Nazis. And I was at a conference, a booking conference, trying to get another solo show of mine that I'd written at the time called Everyone's War, trying to get it booked into colleges. And the guy up behind me, and I was given a chance to perform, not on a major stage, but a performance in front of those who might be interested in it. And then the person who came next on the agenda after myself was a fellow who was a denier of the Holocaust.
Was that Mel Gibson?
No. It was just, you know, I was stunned. This is back in, say, 1980 or something, but it was stunning. That's about all.
It's crazy, people. And this is a dangerous, dangerous period we're in. And I'm not sure, as I said at the beginning, what is really true or not. But I see some trends and I see them as disturbing.
I think your work was comprehensive, putting some pieces of the puzzle together. I think it's very respectable.
But on that note, Stu, I have really gone on a stem winder today, and I think we should end on something salacious.
Well, you know I have such a thing for you.
Well, I did. You were just talking about how much you enjoyed large mammalian tissue?
Well, I think I do. Yes, I do like that. Yes. Okay. So I'll call this two brief stories of perversion. It's like a double feature at the movies, folks. So, okay, one of them. I went down to Chinatown. I went to my go-to place for a takeout place for fish balls and noodles. It's a place David will never be there. And for those of you who might visit Chinatown, it's at the intersection of Elizabeth Street and Bayard Street, just below Canal. So I took my fish balls and noodles and walked to Columbus Park. It was biting cold. This was maybe a month and a half ago. But the Chinese were out there, as they always are, playing cards and tile games, except when the wind is there, that interferes with the card games. I sat on a bench. There was an open bench on either side of me. A tall white guy with a kind of swishy walking style and wearing a long black coat and a huge fabric muffler came swishing and sashaying by, and he had on his right a black woman. They sat on the bench to my left. After a while, I could hear some of their conversation. And Mr. Swishy, as I'll call him, he said, quote, "I wrapped my arms around his waist," unquote. I said, "Oh, Jesus Christ, what do we got here?" And then he went on to say, and I am not going to complete the rest of the description that of what followed the wrapping.
Oh, come on.
No, you can leave that to your thought.
Are we talking about, perhaps, should I say, instead of perversion, penetration?
No, I'm not going to give it any further characterization. You can. Then Swishy says, "These are going to be good scenes for the film." And then I said, "Oh my God, he's reviewing the work he did." Then he said, this is a quote, "He took me to upscale stores." And then another quote, "That was my best night in Milan." So here's this guy doing international porno.
Okay, so let me see. If I had to read from that, when you call him Swishy, he was clearly gay.
Yes, absolutely.
And two, he had found a sugar daddy in Milan.
Yes.
Probably got, how should we put, sodomized the same way.
I am not going to characterize his activities any further.
He, in exchange for that, he got some Gucci and some Armani. And he's doing pornography like an OnlyFans site to make money, too.
What was the last line you said? He's doing it what?
Like an OnlyFans, you know, like a pornography. So this like amateur porn is basically.
Oh, this man may be at the top of his craft. I don't know where he stands on that list.
Well, did you get an autograph?
But wait a minute. No, I did not get his autograph. He got it. All right. Then she starts to speak.
Oh, no. There's more.
And she says, this is the only quote I got because I had enough. She said, "I oiled up and I buttered up." Now, you can tell me if you happen to know what the hell she... I don't even want to think about it, but that I had... that was it. I got up and left. I had heard enough. And I walked away. But there is always... And this is the good side of things. There is always drama on the streets and in the parks in New York City. You just have to get out there and get into the scene. That's number one. Do you want the second one right now, or are we pausing? Number two.
How long do you... Just go ahead, Stu. Let's get all the sex stuff out.
You got to get this one. 58-year-old Charles Roy Rodriguez was a registered sex offender in Houston.
His parents must be so proud.
He died of natural causes several weeks ago. He was sent to a mortuary for eventual cremation. 34-year-old Amber Loudermilk... was the embalmer. Apparently, she was upset with Mr. Rodriguez's history because the fair Amber castrated the lad, then sliced off what I'll call his Johnson, as some cops used it in San Jose when I used to have lunch with these guys. She sliced off his Johnson and inserted said Johnson. And now, once again, I'm leaving you with a question as to where. I can't go further, but I think it does leave possibilities. Now, a mortuary science student was present as this was going on and was told by Miss Loudermilk, "You didn't see anything." Apparently, though, he or she did say something and did say something. Amber lost her job and has been charged with felony abuse of a corpse. Lots of questions there about how a jury would handle that. There are going to be people on a jury like that, even if if it ever goes to trial and if it ever remains a felony. People on a jury like that, some of them are going to say the bastard got what he deserved. Now, they could say in voir dire, that opening part where potential jurors are questioned, they could say, of course, I'll follow the law. I'll listen to the facts and I'll follow the law. But there's going to be a resistance in a jury to damning her and convicting her.
Well, I mean, what she did was kind of twisted also.
Yes, but I'm just saying yes.
But, I mean, at the end of the day, the guy's dead. He's not going to know what she did.
I was just thinking of what he justly deserved.
Well, what he justly deserved, we don't know what he was punished for. What was his name again? Charles Rodriguez?
Oh, yeah, you can Google this one. Charles Roy Rodriguez. And if you say Houston and you just say Amber, A-M-B-E-R, you'll get it.
Well, good luck and good speed.
I hope I brought some good stuff here.
The last stuff that you're talking about, I don't even know where to go. I mean, I really hope that I don't. And the greasing up part.
I'm sorry. I'm delivering the news. I'm the messenger.
I am never going to. I mean, I think I'm going to have to hear.
What was it? It was I got oiled. What did I say? I got
butter.
Oiled up. I oiled up and I buttered up is what she said. I got dogged on.
All I can say to that, Stu, is I think my ability to have dinner is going to be impacted by this story. And I, when you first telling me that about the park story in Chinatown, I was wondering if the woman was a ladyboy and or not, because, you know, just from the way you described it all.
I don't think so, but I have been wrong on that subject, and I won't talk about it now, but wrong on that subject, a subject you'll hear about soon.
Oh my God. Well, this is a new revelation of, but anyway, on that note, too, maybe we should watch Snow White tonight. And I don't mean the porn version.
Yeah, sure.
But anyway, I hope you'll tune in on Spotify both and the rest and tell your friends about our enchanting discussion. Signing off.
Oh, bye.